from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The battle over abortion rights has been fought for a long time in Texas, and it rages on this week. After a court upheld nearly all provisions of a controversial abortion law, Texas House Bill 2, the latest ruling could close more than half of the state's few remaining abortion clinics. This hour on Point, Texas abortion and what constitutes an undue burden on a woman's right to choose. Emily Horn is a pro-life advocate, legislative associate for Texas Right to Life. Here she is in an interview with the Associated Press on Tuesday, celebrating the Fifth Circuit ruling out of New Orleans.
I think this is a landmark, historic ruling. I think that it is just amazing and exciting that the Fifth Circuit has seen to uphold strong pro-life legislation.
But here's Amy Hagstrom-Miller, CEO of Whole Woman's Health. They provide abortion services around the country, have several clinics in Texas. A plaintiff in the case talked with Time Warner Cable News in Austin, Texas, on Tuesday.
Their decision, once again, will push abortion care out of reach for too many Texas women. All Texas abortion clinics are now, once again, subject to politically imposed, medically unnecessary requirements.
We go first today to Houston reporter Carrie Feibel, health and science reporter for public radio member station KUHF. Carrie Feibel, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Sure. Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
So a judge had said, no, this goes too far. Now this appeals panel in the Fifth Circuit says, no, it goes through. It would take effect on July 1st. If it goes into effect, how many abortion clinics remain in Texas now and how many would be on the other side of this going into effect, Carrie?
There are about 17 remaining in Texas right now, and that's down considerably. There were over 40 just a couple years ago, and now we're down to 17, and if this goes into effect, we'll be down to 8.
8 for a population of what's Texas now, 20, 25 million, something like that?
27 million.
27 million.
A huge state, yes. So women would, and none of these clinics that would remain open are in the western part of the state, so we're talking long driving times and distances for women.
I see a number here that says 17% of the state's women of childbearing age, almost a million of them, would have to drive 150 miles or more to the nearest clinic. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that is what would happen. I mean, it's a big state, and all the remaining clinics are going to be concentrated in the major cities, San Antonio, Dallas, Austin, Houston. And that means a lot of women, especially down in the Rio Grande Valley along the Mexican border, they're going to be, you know, facing distances of over 200 miles. Now, the court recognized this. The appeals court said that one clinic in McAllen, Texas, can remain open for now with one doctor allowed to provide abortion. So they sort of carved out an exemption to the health rules that will now be applied to all the other Texas clinics.
McAllen, Texas, way down near the southern tip of Texas, not so far from Brownsville, where I don't know how long, it would be a very, very long drive indeed. Take us back to House Bill 2, what it said in the first place and its path to this week's decision.
Well, House Bill 2 was a very sweeping bill. It had lots of provisions affecting abortion, and it sort of drew national attention because Wendy Davis, who later ran for governor of Texas as a Democrat, she tried to filibuster this bill for, you know, 12 hours standing in her pink sneakers. So people have been watching this for a couple years, but parts of the bill, which did become law eventually, you know, were delayed because of a number of lawsuits. And this was the latest lawsuit, and it's finally come to a close with this decision. Unless the Supreme Court steps in, it will be the law in Texas. And the main two provisions that were being sued over were, one, that doctors who provide abortion at any clinic would have to have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital 30 miles away from the clinic. And that's a problem if the hospital is Catholic and doesn't support abortion, or if they're just is in a hospital that will accept that doctor in that way. And then the second provision of the law was that all clinics doing abortion must have the same standards as ambulatory surgical centers. And these are outpatient walk-in centers where you would go to maybe get back injections, knee orthopedic surgery, typically general anesthesia is used in these. And, you know, abortion rights supporters say this is extremely restrictive. It's meant to put clinics out of business because upgrading your facility to become one of these surgery centers is going to cost millions of dollars. They have requirements for how wide the hallways need to be, how big the rooms need to be, and it's just too expensive.
We had the judge who, the U.S. District Judge Lee Yackel, who last summer struck down that requirement, and I'm quoting here from his decision. He said that sort of called it out. He said this is a brutally effective system of abortion regulation. I guess not buying the health of the woman argument. Judge Yackel said it was intended. Its intent was, quoting him here, to reduce the number of providers licensed to perform abortions. What has the panel said in overturning Judge Yackel? What's the Fifth Circuit panel out of New Orleans saying?
Well, they're accepting in legal terms that a state does have a right within limits to regulate abortion clinics and providers of abortion. And this has been going on in the courts for years. The Supreme Court has said abortion is legal, but a state has various interests in regulating it. And it can pass laws that do make it more difficult for a woman to get abortion or make it cost more or make it take more time. So that's why we have waiting periods in several states, or a woman has to get a mandatory ultrasound before she can get an abortion. So those are allowed, but the Supreme Court has said, well, it can't be an undue burden. Now, they never defined what an undue burden exactly was, so it's been fought out in these appeals courts and in lower district federal courts of is 150 miles an undue burden? Is 300 miles? How far does a woman have to drive? And that's really what's being fought over here.
Karen, this is a tricky question, but within Texas, did the supporters of this bill, do they genuinely go to women's health, or are they celebrating? Are these, anti-abortion people who are celebrating simply the restricting of abortion?
Well, you hear both. I mean, you'll hear this touted as a pro-life victory. Our attorney general in Texas, Ken Paxton, said, this is a victory both for the unborn and also for the health of women. When I talk to, pro-life groups, they say they are concerned about the health of women, that they don't want women getting an abortion. They don't agree with abortion, but as long as women are going to get them, they want them to be safe and protected. So that's what they say publicly, and that's kind of where they leave it.
And finally, Carrie, if there is a stay on this, so these clinics are not shut down on July 1st, where would that come from? They want an appeal. They want to appeal the decision to the U.S. Supreme Court. That could take a while to work through. Who could give them the stay? Would it be the same panel at the Fifth Circuit?
Well, yes. I mean, they've officially asked the Fifth Circuit to stay their own order. That's probably not very likely, but they need to go through that step. And then if that's turned down, they'll go straight to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they'll probably ask for full appeal. But while that's going forward, which, as you say, could take a long time, the Supreme Court could put an emergency order in place saying, let those clinics that don't comply with these surgery center rules remain open until we hear the full appeal. But that remains to be seen.
Carrie Feibel with us from Houston, Texas, health and science reporter for member station KUHF there. Carrie, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's go to Austin, Texas now, and Heather Busby, executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Texas. Heather, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
What's the impact of the restrictions that Texas has already placed on abortion clinics? And if this goes through on July 1st, what's the further impact you anticipate?
Well, we're looking at close to 1 million women in the state of Texas who live more than 150 miles from an abortion clinic. And, there is this small, narrow exception for the Rio Grande Valley, this clinic in McAllen, mm-hmm. Whole Woman's Health, that's able to stay open. But I just did some calculations. When you think about West Texas, for example, Lubbock, which used to have an abortion clinic, May of 2013, they had a clinic that was open. It's since closed. From Lubbock, Texas, it is 387 miles to San Antonio, 345 miles to Dallas. Those are the closest clinics to Lubbock in Texas. And, think about if you're having to travel that distance without a good public transportation infrastructure, having to take time off work, having to spend time in a hotel, get a hotel room, have your children taken care of, all of the factors that factor into this. It's a really insurmountable burden for many, many people. And it disproportionately impacts the most vulnerable people in the state, folks in rural areas, low-income people, young women. It's really devastating to access to safe, legal, and timely abortion care.
I'm trying to keep up with the realities of this. Would it be a one-trip undertaking usually, or are there multiple visits required? How would that work?
Well, you know, it depends. If you're further along in the pregnancy, you know, you're past 12 weeks, mm-hmm. it's typically a two-day procedure. Okay. And Texas has a mandatory waiting period. So you have to go at least 24 hours before the procedure for state-mandated lies that doctors are forced to tell their patients, even though they're not medically accurate.
Did you say state-mandated lies?
Correct.
Meaning, what do you mean by that?
So Texas has a mandatory pamphlet that doctors have to give to their patients and that they have to explain that tells – it includes information that has been repeatedly disproven and rejected by the mainstream medical community, such as abortion causes breast cancer. It leads to, you know, higher rates of suicide and depression. And doctors
have no discretion.
They
have to read anyway.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether or not they believe that or mm-hmm. it's true.
Do you have any sense of the numbers of abortions in Texas and whether the restrictions already in place and the closed clinics already closed have pushed those numbers down?
You know, some preliminary research has shown that the rate has gone down somewhat in Texas. And anecdotally, knowing from, you know, working with abortion funds and these groups that are helping people overcome the barriers to access, we've seen more and more people are having to leave the state of Texas. People with you know, access to financial resources are often choosing to leave and go elsewhere.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Texas, abortion, and what constitutes an undue burden on a woman's right to choose. Texas legislature has put through the law all the way back in 2013, really clamping down on availability of abortion for the sake of the women's own health, they said. Heather Busby's with us, executive director of NARAL Pro Choice Texas. We're going to hear in just a moment from Texas Alliance for Life. Here was Rick Perry, former Texas governor, big Republican, of course, once again a presidential candidate right now. He has been a champion of the law that the court has this week upheld. He talked here with Fox News' Megyn Kelly yesterday, saying the law would be beneficial for women's health.
The people of the state of Texas, we discussed this at length, a rather lengthy debate, and this is really getting down to about women's health. The idea that you don't want a facility to have the same standards as a ambulatory surgical center, I think really goes counter to women's health.
Bring in all those facilities or don't do it. Net effect, far fewer abortion clinics on the horizon in Texas, and already a much reduced number, and anti-abortion advocates celebrating that. Here's Stephanie Todi, a lawyer for the Center for Reproductive Rights, which challenged the Texas law, talking with NPR on Tuesday, saying it would simply force women to leave the state for abortions.
The ruling is absurd because the court is essentially saying if you want to have an abortion, you have to travel to other states that don't have these laws.
Heather Busby with NARAL Pro-Choice Texas. Please stand by there in Austin, Texas. Also with us from Austin right now is Joseph Joe Poyman, founder, executive director of the Texas Alliance for Life. Joe Poyman, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Are you celebrating this court's decision in New Orleans? And if so, exactly what are you celebrating?
Well, we're very pleased that the court has agreed with the Texas legislature that the state may raise the health and safety standards at abortion facilities to the level where we believe they should have been all along, at the level of ambulatory surgical centers.
Is this really about having that level of service available, or is this it looks like people don't want abortion, and this is a way to clamp down on it to push it out, Joe?
Well, we get it that the Supreme Court has banned Texas from banning most abortions. I mean, the hands of the Texas legislature are tied, like all the states. We cannot ban most abortions. However, we can ensure that women have enough information before they choose abortion to know whether that decision is the best for them. That was our sonogram law, our informed consent law in 2011. And we can assure that abortions are not done in a manner that puts the health and safety of women at risk. That was the 2013 House Bill 2. That's what these laws are about.
What's your dream here, Joe? How far down do you think this might push abortion numbers in Texas?
Well, you know, this is not our preference, Tom, but the reality is this. Abortion will remain readily available in Texas because there are these huge ambulatory surgical centers that perform abortions that are in all the major cities, with the very large cities, where these other abortion facilities that are not at that same level of health care also reside. So the ones that are going to close, either they upgrade or close, they're in the major cities where these huge ambulatory surgical centers that perform abortions already reside. Those are Fort Worth, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, and Houston, which is where the vast majority of the population of Texas resides.
So you don't think this is going to bring down the number of abortions in your state, Joe?
No, it's really not. Again, that's not our preference, but that is the reality. These facilities, of which there are seven right now and about two more about to come online in the coming weeks, they have enormous capacity to do probably twice as many abortions as are currently being performed in Texas, which is in about 60,000 or 62,000.
Of course, Texas is a big state, a very big state. You had 40 clinics when the House Bill 2 was passed. Now you've got, what, 18? If it goes through July 1st, you might have half of that. That's a big reduction right there. At what point, and you are going to have women who have to drive 100, 150, Heather's saying some of them, you know, 300 or more miles. At what point does just simple distance become an undue burden? The Supreme Court's hurdle for deciding this, Joe?
Well, Texas is a big state, but if you look at El Paso, there's a one abortion facility there. They can either upgrade to an ambulatory surgical center. There are at least half a dozen or a dozen ambulatory surgical centers in El Paso that perform other types of procedures. They can certainly do that. Right across the border in Santa Teresa in New Mexico is an abortion facility 12 miles from the one that is currently operating. It's the same owner. So I think the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals considered that, and they said women from El Paso, they could go to El Paso. From El Paso, they could go to San Antonio, which is quite a distance, or they're just going to go across the border to Santa Teresa, and that's certainly an option for them. Again, this is not our preference, but this is really the reality. In the Rio Grande Valley, the McAllen abortion facility is going to remain open. It's unfortunate that those women, many of them poor, are not going to benefit from the same health safety standards as women around the state who are seeking abortion.
Joe, you know, but I mean, the medical professionals say this just isn't about health and safety, that's really a straight-up ruse, that there's not a problem here, that you haven't had a problem and there isn't a problem, and this really is just about clamping down on abortion. Now, you can be for clamping down on abortion, but are you being honest about your goal?
We heard testimony when this bill was being debated by experts, including practicing OBGYNs, and they pointed out that if a woman has a miscarriage, she will have a procedure called dilation and curettage that will likely be performed in a hospital operating room or an ambulatory surgical center operating room. That is the same procedure used for the vast majority of abortions in Texas. And why would a woman seeking abortion, an elective abortion, be subjected to a lower standard of care in a standalone abortion facility with a lower standard of care for the same procedure as she would get if she had a miscarriage, and that would be in an ambulatory surgical center? It makes no sense. Because a woman seeking abortion, she should not be subjected to a lower standard of care than other patients with similar procedures. That's our basic argument. It's just common sense, and we're very pleased that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously agreed with that.
Heather Busby, what do you make of Joe's argument?
Well, you know, Joe really just undercut his own argument when he said, oh, they can just go across the border. If he's so concerned about health and safety and a standard of care, why is he so okay with someone just going to another state where the same regulations are not in place? I mean, clearly, this is just a callous attempt to very swiftly and effectively close down abortion clinics. I'm also disgusted by his assertion that the ambulatory surgical centers have enormous capacity. What he's not telling you mm-hmm. is that the other part of this law, the admitting privileges requirement, has drastically reduced the number of doctors who are able to even perform abortions in Texas. You can have the biggest, most sparkling, cold, sterile building in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a physician, you can't do the, you know, thousands of abortions that Joe is trying to say these facilities can do. And we've seen that. These facilities have month-long waiting periods sometimes to get an appointment. That pushes people further along in their pregnancy, which increases the risks to their health and safety. So this law does the exact opposite of its purported intent.
Does that push them past the 20-week limit that the law also imposes?
Heather? Often it does, and then they have to travel out of state. So how is that helping women?
I've got questions for both of you from our listeners. Omaha, Nebraska, Nancy's calling in. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air. Thanks for calling. Hello, Nancy.
You know, we're talking about the different clinic facilities and things like that and the whole argument around women's health and
yes.
safety.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious about to try to understand, you know, just kind of the sheer numbers and statistics of, you know, adverse outcomes to the women's health in abortion clinics versus ambulatory clinics. You know, just what are we talking about here?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Is your numbers.
Yeah, is there a manifest difference, Heather, in terms of outcomes, depending on the facilities available when a woman has an abortion?
Absolutely not. And there was overwhelming evidence at trial and, you know, presented to the legislature. This is a solution in search of a problem that does not exist. There is no difference in the health and safety outcomes whether you're getting a procedure, a 5-minute outpatient procedure where there's no incision, you're not under anesthesia, you know, in a regular doctor's office, a medical clinic, versus this mini hospital that has, you know, requirements like it has to have a men's locker room. Why does an abortion clinic need a men's locker room or a giant janitorial closet? You know, it's really they could not point to a single reason why, you know, the evidence that there was a problem that existed already. And if you look at the state's own reporting data, there were no violations in these clinics that would jeopardize health and safety. There was a report that came out about a year and a half ago nationwide, and Texas was included among it. And there's really no health and safety problem that existed prior to this law passing.
One more call. I'll come to you, Joe. Anne in North Haven, Connecticut. Anne, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for the woman who is so overjoyed and the gentleman who was so overjoyed to get this verdict upheld.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To restrict abortion clinics, what makes you think that these people are not going to go to backdoor abortionists who are completely putting people at risk because abortion is no longer legal? You're putting them back to the 60s. This is not going to go away. It's just going to go underground. And I am absolutely offended at these people who think that they can restrict abortion because they don't like it. It's just going to go underground, and health and safety is going to go out the door.
Anne, I appreciate your call. Joe Poyman, we're looking at abortion in Texas with Joe Poyman and Heather Busby. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Joe, what do you say?
Sure, Tom. This law does not ban abortions. We have abortions happening tens of thousands of times every year.
But it does practically cut down access and put a large number of women very far from a clinic.
Actually not. I mean, it's the abortion facilities that are closing with the exception of...
I'm reading here 900,000 would be 150 miles or more from a clinic. That's a pretty large number.
And that's the reality today, Tom. We already have a very spread out state, and the people in the valley will continue to have the abortion facility in McAllen, Texas. That's going to remain the same.
You don't think it's going to push people to back alley abortions? That's Ann's concern out of Connecticut.
Look at Austin, Texas. We have two abortion facilities. One's an ambulatory surgical center.
Not everybody lives in a major city. The number I'm seeing here is 900,000, 150 miles away.
Right, and that's the case today, before these others close. I mean, they're not – Lubbock has –
So it'll be further.
One Heather mentioned, and Lubbock was closed long before House Bill 2 was even anticipated. That was run by Planned Parenthood. They closed that before the law was even passed, and that's the case with a number of other abortion facilities. So what we're just seeing is abortion facilities in cities that have operating ambulatory surgical centers that perform abortions, those are the ones we'll either have to upgrade or close. San Antonio, we're seeing two ambulatory surgical centers, one run by Planned Parenthood, one run by another outfit. They are coming online in the coming weeks, and that's what we're going to see in Texas.
Joe Poyman with the Texas Alliance for Life. Thank you for joining us from Austin, Texas today, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
I want to look at this issue of undue burden. That is the standard that the Supreme Court has laid down here. Texas may be pushing that, challenging that right now. With us from Cleveland, Ohio, is Jesse Hill, law professor at Case Western Reserve University School of Law. Jesse Hill, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
The people who don't want these further clinic closings are begging the Supreme Court to get involved here. What is the standard? Is it clear of what constitutes an undue burden? Is a 150-mile drive an undue burden? Is a 387-mile drive an undue burden? Is it clear, Jesse?
It's anything but clear. And that's the big problem here. So in a 1992 case, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, the Supreme Court said that a law is unconstitutional if it's an undue burden to accessing abortion, and then went on to define that in very vague terms. So it basically said the law has to impose a substantial obstacle to a large fraction of women. And the Supreme Court really has not revisited the definition since then. There have only been a few major Supreme Court cases since then, and they have not clarified the standard. So it's just opened the door to widespread confusion and differing decisions among lower courts, you know, pushing the envelope by states that want to restrict abortion because the standard is so unclear. It opens a lot of opportunities to just keep trying new things. It raises almost more questions than it answers.
I mean, I'm looking at this decision. This is 1992, Supreme Court, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, as you say. This issue of the motivation for raising all these requirements in Texas seems to become very important. The decision said an undue burden exists, and therefore a provision of law is invalid if its purpose or effect is to place substantial obstacles in the path of a woman seeking an abortion before the fetus attains viability. So purpose, effect is one thing, but purpose also, motivation comes in here, Jesse.
That's absolutely right. I mean, it comes in a couple of ways. First of all, as you said, if it has the purpose of just shutting down clinics, then it's unconstitutional. The problem is that's an extremely hard thing to prove because legislators know how to speak the language of women's health and, neutral purposes for these laws. And so it's rare that you can point to kind of an uncluttered or unambiguous purpose for a law as being, we just want to stop abortion.
People could be sincere, but if they're not, and it's a cover, what is the means by which a court or the law cuts through BS if it is BS?
They almost never do, and that's one of the big problems here. They're very deferential to legislators. They're going to give them the benefit of the doubt and not assume that purpose if there's a reason to think otherwise. The other question here is if the standard is undue, what does undue mean? If it doesn't have a real health purpose, isn't that undue?
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Texas, abortion, and what constitutes an undue burden on a woman's right to choose. Jesse Hill is with us, professor of law at Case Western Reserve University School of Law in Cleveland. Heather Busby is with us from Austin, Texas, executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Texas. We heard from Joe Poyman with the Texas Alliance for Life. With us as well right now from Washington is Joanne Kennan, healthcare editor at Politico, for a little national perspective on abortion laws around the country. Joanne, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Are these Texas steps, which may now fully take effect in just a couple of weeks, are they part of a national trend of tightening, Joanne?
Yes, and this is a trend that has increased over the last few months, but it's actually been stepping up for 3 or 4 years now, or longer, but really sort of an intensification over the last 3 or 4 years. States are trying to regulate abortion in many, many ways. The Texas situation is requiring doctors to have admitting privileges, and if, and also these rules about the physical, making it more like an operating room, like a mini hospital.
Yep.
But there are lots and lots, and those are common. A lot of states are doing that. But there's also a lot of states had 24-hour waiting periods before you could get an abortion. Now some of them are going to 2 or 3 days. If you're talking about having to travel hundreds of miles to get to a clinic, staying for 2 or 3 days is arguably much more burdensome for a woman. There are restrictions about telemedicine and abortion because some of the people who use abortion pills are trying to use telemedicine to do some of the preliminary
screening or questioning.
Mm-hmm. They can actually unlock a drawer that has the drug in it after doing some kind of a remote evaluation.
Wow.
The same states that are trying to encourage more telemedicine for rural areas are actually trying to restrict it for abortion. Two states, Kansas and Oklahoma, restricting a kind of abortion, a kind of procedure that's used in the second trimester that's reminiscent of the partial birth abortion debate we had a number of years ago. And then you've got about a dozen, maybe more now, maybe it's closer to 13 or 14 states that have laws on the books, and there's one pending in Congress that would limit abortions or ban abortions, almost all abortions, after 20 weeks of pregnancy. So, and there are more, but I'm stopping there.
Yeah, no, that's quite a list already. Jesse Hill, is there any sign that the Supreme Court may be moving toward taking this up?
It's always hard to say, but I think this is a reasonable candidate for the Supreme Court to take. It's already intervened in this Fifth Circuit case once to stay the decision or to keep the status quo in place while the appeals court made its decision.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also really a good vehicle potentially for the Supreme Court to revisit the undue burden standard or to clarify it. So that would suggest that if the Supreme Court's going to wade back into this fray, that this would be the case.
I mean, the court must be watching, and they're being beseeched right now to intervene here to keep some of these clinics open. If they don't get into the case, can we take that, Jesse Hill, as evidence that the court does not have a problem with the growth of restrictive measures being implemented in states around the country? And if they do get into it, is it clear with this court which way they would go on what constitutes undue burden? They could come in and say, oh, no, nothing Texas is doing is an undue burden.
Well, yeah, you never want to read too much into a decision to deny a hearing in a case. I think it could mean a lot of things. If they take the case, yeah, it's hard to know what they could do, but I don't think a lot of optimism is warranted here. I mean, I think there's a sense that, you know, look, if this isn't an undue burden, if closing all but a handful of clinics in a state the size of Texas does not constitute an undue burden on a woman's right to access abortion, you know, what is? The court has got to say at least this. But on the other hand, you know, there's the swing vote is Justice Kennedy. No one really knows what he's thinking about the issue, and it could go either way here, I think.
Joanne, what do you hear when people talk about this court as currently constituted and undue burden, or for that matter, Roe v. Wade itself, the fundamental decision?
Yeah, there are two sets of issues. The undue burden, a lot of people do expect either Texas or a related, very similar law in Mississippi, which has been fighting. There's only one clinic open in the state, and they've been fighting to stay open. And so far, they are open. There already is a petition before the court to take the Mississippi case. They haven't. They could decide. We believe they've discussed it in what these case conferences they have, and that we could hear in the next few weeks whether they're going to take it up. A lot of people in the legal world who watch this think the Texas case or some combination of Texas and Mississippi will go. Those are undue burden cases. The issue of Roe itself. The 20-week ban that I mentioned mm-hmm. has been challenged in a couple of states. We have a situation now where it is the law in I don't know, 7 or 8 states now, 9 states, this 20-week abortion ban for most abortions. And the 3 states that it's gone to court, I believe it's 3 states,
the courts have said it is not allowable under Roe and it has not gone into effect. But you can get very different opinions about abortion and the law of abortion and the emotions in this country about abortion, the beliefs about abortion. Different courts are going to rule differently. It's interesting that nobody has yet gone to the Supreme Court on the 20-week bans. I think both sides are afraid of what might happen. I think that you have a presidential election next year, which could shape the makeup of the court in the coming few years, and we may not see the Roe case challenged for a few more years. I think the Texas and Mississippi, there are a lot of we've talked to a lot of lawyers who think it's ripe for a Supreme Court review.
Heather Busby in Austin, Texas, describe for us, if you would, the practical impact of an after 20-week ban on abortion. What does that mean in terms of women's lives, their pregnancies? Just if they decide they don't want to or can't go forward, what are the implications of that ban?
Well, you know, I can actually give you an example of that. I spoke to a woman who, after the 20-week ban was passed and went into effect, she was diagnosed in her pregnancy with a severe fetal abnormality. And supposedly there's an exception for that, but she was unable to find a provider who would do her abortion at, you know, I think she was around 21, right around the 20-week mark. So she had to go out of state to Arkansas. She had to do this very quickly, ended up selling her wedding ring and, you know, having to pawn it and scrambled. She and her husband had to scramble to get together as much money as they could and go out of state and stay several days in a hotel. In fact, I think they slept a couple of nights in their car because they didn't have enough money for a hotel. And this was, you know, a pregnancy that they wanted to carry to term. And so even with the supposed exceptions, and I will say that they are very vaguely worded. The wording is incompatible with life. And if you're a doctor, sometimes you're going to err on the side of caution because you don't want to lose your license or even face criminal penalties.
Wow. Donna, in Atlanta, Georgia. Donna, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. One solution to the just in Texas and New Orleans going to just the hospital. What I'm seeing, at least in Atlanta, is there's lots and lots of 24-hour clinics, emergency clinics. I mean, there could be one side by side right across the street. Maybe the women's group could reach out to them and find doctors to either A, if they would hire abortion doctors who do abortions that are, you know, maybe they could do it there because their facility is a hospital. I've been in one. And
so you're not talking just about a doc in a box place with a nurse at a drugstore. You're talking about the equivalent of an emergency room, sort of standalone emergency room.
Yeah, it's an emergency clinic. And so when you go in, and they're everywhere. They are everywhere. I mean, one street could have like three of them. So at least in Atlanta. So I'm just saying if we could just, the women's groups could focus on.
Look to those. Yeah, let us pick it up in the Texas case, if I may. Donna, thank you for your call from Atlanta. Heather, is that an option in Texas?
You know, after Texas passed a law in early 2000, in 2003, that would require all abortions past 16 weeks be performed in an ambulatory surgical center, providers started calling around trying to find ambulatory surgical centers that would allow their doctors to practice there, that would rent them space nights and weekends. And it was incredibly difficult. Texas, actually, you couldn't get an abortion past 16 weeks for about 2.5 years because they couldn't locate centers that would where they could provide abortions. I mean, you think about what else is happening in the anti-abortion movement with the harassment, the intimidation, the threats, doctors being murdered in their homes and their churches. Doctors are not falling all over themselves to take that kind of risk and put their lives, literally put their lives at risk to perform abortions. The ones who do it are completely heroic. And so, you know, it's difficult. We've seen, since this law has passed, intimidation on doctors not to sponsor their colleagues to get admitting privileges at hospitals. You've seen hospitals pressured to revoke admitting privileges.
Wow. That's a pretty broad spectrum. We're talking about Texas, abortion, what constitutes an undue burden on a woman's right to choose. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Charlottesville, Virginia. Helen is calling. Hi, Helen. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm a physician. I lived until last summer for ages in San Antonio. That's where I went to medical school at the University of Texas Health Science Center.
Great.
And I trained in pediatrics. My husband, I met there in med school. He's mm-hmm. an obstetrician.
Yeah.
And, you know, bottom line is what you all know is women's health. You know, that's the truth. And that's what I feel you need to, you know, especially stay on point about that.
But what does that mean? What does that mean to you, Helen, that the state legislature has it right? You need an ambulatory surgical center to perform abortion safely?
Yes, because last month, my cousin, it was not for an abortion, it was an ambulatory center for a outpatient surgery in the recovery room, received a medicine to reduce bleeding, went into anaphylactic shock, almost died.
But that was not an abortion.
Right, not an abortion. But see, even everyday other ambulatory procedures, you know, as a doctor, I know this, my husband knows this, that there is risk for every, you know, procedure, even dentist office.
But when does it become an undue burden to ask? I mean, I'm reading here that first trimester abortions, Helen, I'm reading, account for about 9 in 10 of all abortions, are among the safest of all medical procedures, with a major complication rate of less than 0.1%. That seems like a quite small risk, Helen.
But if you happen to be that small percentage, you want the best doctor. So that means, yes, the doctor should be qualified and should be a good doctor and strong enough to have those admitted, qualifications.
Do you support women's abortion rights as currently laid out in this country, Helen?
I support unborn women and unborn men.
So that, I take that as a no.
Well, you can take that as your, everyone has agendas.
Yeah.
Everyone.
I'm just looking for an honest opinion.
Yeah.
It sounds like you don't support abortion.
I support women who have to make that non-choice, that those women stay alive and aren't at risk of death because they've had to be pushed into that non-choice.
Helen, I appreciate your call. Heather, there's a former doctor out of San Antonio saying, no, bring on the full facility. Otherwise, there's a risk. And, hey, by the way, not too crazy about abortion either.
Well, I think we can probably guess at her true motivation for supporting this law has nothing to do with health and safety.
That may be too far to go, but her husband's an obstetrician. And on the other hand, you're right. She's not crazy about abortion. I don't know where to go with that. Do we just end up having to disagree, or can you make comparisons between different procedures and what risk is reasonable and appropriate in a medical setting?
Well, I'd like to bring it back to cost and how, even going back to the idea of the standalone emergency room, those are really expensive and often not covered by insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So how much out-of-pocket cost is someone going to be forced to bear? And I understand that the Supreme Court doesn't see cost as an undue burden, but that is a substantial obstacle in the path of someone who's seeking an abortion. And to force ambulatory surgical centers based on the idea that there might be the one and, however million chance of a complication is really just kind of absurd. I mean, why aren't we going to, hospitals to get our teeth cleaned because there might be a complication or a risk of infection, if a instrument scrapes your gum? I mean, by making these comparisons, you're not actually enforcing your argument.
Jesse Hill, we've just got 20 seconds here. Texas is a very big state. Can the Supreme Court really stand by if there are questions being raised about the undue burden standard here? Can they really just stand with their arms crossed if this goes forward?
It's done it for about 23 years. I think it can do whatever it wants in this case, but I think the chances are good that it's going to intervene.
Watch this space, watch Texas just in the next few days as the call for some further intervention is raised here. But as it stands now, it looks like more tightening on abortion there. Jesse Hill at Case Western Reserve University, thank you very much for joining us today, Jesse.
Thank you.
Heather Busby at Austin, Texas, NARAL Pro-Choice, Texas. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
And Joanne Kennan at Politico in Washington. Thank you so much, Joanne.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.